Welcome to Season 2 of the Healthcare Fraud Shield podcast. Healthcare Fraud Shield is a leading provider of fraud, waste, and abuse detection software to healthcare payers. Our innovative suite of integrated products includes AI, prepayment, postpayment for both medical and pharmacy, case management, and a reporting tool. If you'd like more information about Healthcare Fraud Shield, visit our website at www.hcfraudshield.com. Thank you for listening. Hi, and welcome to the Healthcare Fraud Shield podcast. This is Season 2, Episode 5. My name is Karen Weintraub. I am the Executive Vice President with Healthcare Fraud Shield, and I'm very excited today to have my guest. Tony, I'm going to have you do your own introduction because I don't think I could do you justice with all of your certifications and your vast coding experience. So how about you introduce yourself and a little bit about your background?
Well, it's such a pleasure to be here today, Karen. I love your show. I think it's awesome. I actually found your show and I was like, I got to connect with this lady. She is amazing. So it really is a true pleasure to be here. And my name is Tony L. Holmes. I am an entrepreneur, so I work mostly in the coding and compliance space. My company, Alpha Coding Experts, we specialize in the business side of medicine. So we work with hospitals and physician practices, payers, law firms, on pretty much anything that intersects with medical coding, medical billing, and compliance. I also have a podcast. Definitely check that out, Alpha Coding Podcast. Karen was actually a guest of mine. We had so much fun together, Karen.
We'll have to do it again. And the feeling is mutual. I'm so fortunate to have connected with so many folks that our work really does align, even though some people might look at us and say, you know, maybe you're kind of on the opposite ends, but we're really not, because our goal is to make sure that things are done right. So I think you feel the same way.
Absolutely, 100%. And that's the vibe that I got from your podcast. It's not a us against them. And sometimes it's looked at that way. It's like an adversarial thing, but it really is not. We just want to put the right information out there and make sure that people understand how important compliance is. And you know, part of what I do in the legal world as an expert witness is why I wanted to connect with you, because you know, Healthcare Fraud Shield is obviously a player in the fraud, waste, and abuse space, and you guys are doing such great work there.
Thank you. And again, likewise, you know, it's really what our goal is for the podcast. I know we have newsletters and I know we both do, you know, various things. It's education. We want to educate the people in our field about, you know, what they should be looking out for, what's new, what's coming down, you know, the pipeline as far as, you know, any new codes or new regulations. So I think it's really important to have all that, those different perspectives. So I really appreciate the information that you put out there. And there's a few other folks as well that I know we've connected with through various mediums, LinkedIn and other social media. So thanks to everyone. I guess we're just going to thank everyone today. So
I know. It's a big happy family.
So before we get to it, I'm curious, how did you get into coding?
So I actually, when I graduated from high school, it was like around the time 2007, 2008, when the economy totally tanked. And so my goal was to go to, you know, the law school track and I was going to be an attorney. But at that time, I mean, it just was like a really depressing time for everybody. And acquiring that kind of debt just didn't make a whole lot of sense. And so I ended up getting an internship at a local hospital in my town. And that's where I got the exposure to health information management, medical records. And I was like, okay, healthcare is always going to be a thriving business. It's going to be a lot of job security. So, you know, I looked at the path of medical billing, medical coding, and that's where I kind of discovered this world. But part of why I do the podcast is because I want to, you know, raise awareness, because I don't think enough people know about this field and the opportunities that this field has. And a lot of people think, well, okay, to be a coder, you have to sit at a desk and code charts all day. And it's like having coding expertise is You know, it's just incredible. It's such an incredible asset to the bigger picture in terms of healthcare, and the information, the expertise that we have actually influences so many things, social policy, public policy. It's really mind blowing when you think about it.
And if anyone hasn't read it, I forget what month the issue was, but you had a feature in the American Academy of Professional Coders magazine, which really talked about, you know, some of these areas that, you know, you felt were important as related to this field. So I would recommend folks check it out. I did read it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. That was in December, actually, the December 2020 issue.
There you go. Excellent. So why don't we dive right in? I know there's a specific coding topic for today, and we're going to hope and pray that, as you know, my birds stay quiet. There are no Amazon deliveries today, so the dogs don't bark, and that we don't lose internet connection. So with that, here we go. So let's talk first about the coding changes that are and have been occurring, and how do you keep up with that? And what would be your recommendations for folks to do so?
Wow, it's been intense. Like even for the most seasoned of, you know, folks that have been in the industry, the last year has been total chaos with the changes. I mean, we saw obviously with the public health emergency, we've seen digital health explode. I know, you know, obviously we've seen a lot of crackdowns in the fraud, waste, and abuse space. It's a full-time job and it's not glamorous. You're talking hours upon hours of reading every single day. You know, and it's not just like reading a CPT book, it's reading the federal registrar and all of the payer policy updates and the OIG work plan and all of the things that come out there. And then Karen, like, what the heck is going on? The AMA just came out and changed all this stuff with the interpretations of the evaluation and management guidelines. Right. Like, there's total chaos right now. So it's a good time to be a coding expert. And, you know, we've talked about this before privately, but business is good. And I don't think we're going to be out of jobs or out of things to do for a very long time because of just the change as far as the landscape and how much things are evolving and the compliance landscape. I talk to providers about this all the time. There was a time when you could kind of, you know, fly under the radar, but that time with the way that technology is emerging and this data analytics, that time is no more. You really have to be invested in your compliance.
I would agree. It's much harder to hide billing patterns now, you know, than it was, you know, years ago. And, you know, even for my side of the house, we have to be just as up on all of those changes to be able to account for providers might be billing differently because of that. We should talk about evaluation and management codes in a few months. We'll see what has been brought to our attention and from the data perspective as 2021 continues. So well, that'll be a topic for you and I privately in the future.
Of course. I mean, it's just mind blowing, but lots of reading and then, you know, talking to industry professionals. I love to bring experts on my podcast, and that's just such a great way to kind of get connected with different niches in the market. And so, you know, definitely talking to industry professionals, doing a ton of reading, getting on all the listservs and doing what we do, Karen.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So when we talk about coding topics, so, you know, I think as we all kind of work through different areas in our various jobs, you know, some coding areas, I'd say are probably easier than others. Some you kind of, you know, develop an affinity for, some you develop an aversion for, you know, because they're a little bit more challenging. What is one of the areas that you like to focus on?
Yes. So I do a lot of work in the personal injury space. So orthopedics, pain management. And recently I've spent a lot of time working on cases where I've seen some pretty egregious stuff with pain management injections. So over the past few years, we've seen the OIG cut cut down pretty hard on pain management and anesthesiology, and for good reason, because there's just so many things that are happening that are completely unacceptable with these pain management clinics. And, you know, with specifically injections, obviously everybody wants to avoid surgery if surgery is not the best outcome for the, or is not going to yield the best outcome for the patient. But bilking the system for, you know, unnecessary injections, unbundling, all of the things that I've seen very recently, it's just, it's unacceptable. And so pain management injections is definitely one of my favorite topics right now, because I'm just seeing so much fraudulent activity.
Are there specific types of injections? I know there's quite a few different ones. Are there ones that you're seeing that have some more suspect billing around them than others?
Yes. So definitely the facet joint injections, the ESI epidural steroid injections. So a lot of things with the spine. So there were pretty significant changes back in 2017 with regards to diagnostic radiology component of the services. So fluoroscopy, CT guidance. And so very commonly what I see is unbundling those codes. So for example, CPT code 64483, obviously, if you look at the code description, you'll see that it includes fluoroscopic guidance. But for some reason, you know, some providers haven't gotten the memo. And so we frequently see that unbundled. And this comes up very often in my work in personal injury, when you're dealing with cases like, let's say, an auto insurance company or a workers' compensation plan. And the idea is that, okay, well, they don't follow any of the same rules as the payers, so we'll just unbundle everything and hope for the best. Well, times are changing, and these companies are cracking down, and they're saying no, NCCI edits and, you know, unbundling concepts apply. And so that's where I see a ton of fraudulent activity.
Do you see differences between how payers handle it from an edit perspective? And does that make it more of a challenge?
Yes. I mean, there's definitely disparities across, you know, payers. Obviously, workers' compensation is, you know, specific to the state and the rules of that state. I see, you know, things like the Muse. So, you know, there's only, let's say, one unit allowed, but they're reporting two, because instead of reporting, let's say, an RT and an LT modifier or a 50 modifier, they're reporting it like it would just be two units of service. And then trying to bypass that, saying, okay, well, this carrier doesn't follow this set of bundling edits, so, you know, we're just going to unbundle everything. Another thing I see a lot is frequency of injections. So, you know, there's a 10-day global period on some of these injections, a lot with nerve blocks, joint injections, where you'll see, okay, so patient had the procedure on the 10th of the month and they're back by the 21st and they're having another set of injections. And if you look at the original plan of care, the patient was supposed to have injections on L4 to S1, and they're getting injections on L1 to S1. And so wrong levels, frequency of the injections, these are things that are coming up more and more.
Do you have an opportunity to look at, I guess, the data as well, and to see if while you're reviewing, you know, they're changing the pattern? So for example, you know, they've got a 10-day global period. Do you see providers trying to bill 11 days, you know, or, you know, just what are the different things outside of, you know, unnecessary or excessive injections, like, that you're seeing when you're looking at these cases?
Yeah, so definitely that. Okay, so 10 days, we're going to schedule them back on the 11th day for that next round of injections. The data, as you know, the data tells a lot of stories. You're able to extract so much information from data. And what we found is that providers that have an ownership interest in, let's say, ambulatory surgery center, are shifting from doing injections that they would typically do in their office to the ASC setting unnecessarily, because they now can collect an additional facility fee from those injections that could be performed in the office setting. So looking at those utilization trends is always really, really interesting, because you'll see, you know, okay, the last 2 years they've been doing 90% of their injections in the office, and then all of a sudden that, you know, changes and it's 50% ASC, 50% office. That's really interesting from a data standpoint. And then, of course, the coding rules are different in the ASC setting versus the office setting. So, you know, for additional levels of pain management injections, for the most part, those additional levels are not reportable by the ASC. Now, the physician can bill for as many levels as they do, but the ASC can't report those additional levels. That's also something that we see pretty commonly.
You just brought up a few things that I think are interesting. And what I love about these conversations is that what people may not realize is that our Q&A together is not really planned. So we talk and we generate thoughts and questions. So, you know, you're not just looking at this from a coding perspective, you are also looking at things from compliance and legal. So you mentioned one about providers referring. So for example, you have to check a provider's contract. And then also, what are the different self-referral laws? Can they even refer to an ASC if they have ownership in it? So it just brings up a whole host of other things that people realize are, it's coding is not just coding. You're looking at so many other things. Same thing from an investigative standpoint.
It's so much deeper than that. And I think where folks go wrong is they get really siloed and they're thinking of, okay, it's just, you know, codes and that's it and whatever. It's so much bigger than that. And the data, it tells an interesting story sometimes. And, you know, we didn't have access to this kind of data 5-10 years ago. So we weren't able to monitor these trends. And it's very interesting to see, you know, some of the ownership interests that have taken place with, you know, so much shift in outpatient or inpatient procedures going outpatient. And then, you know, obviously ASC being a de-escalated area of care. And with these ASCs, I've even seen providers basically set up their own Uber company to where they're, you know, transporting their patients to and from their ASCs or their office to get, you know, sometimes unnecessary treatment. And they're reporting this to insurance because, as you know, you know, transportation is covered by some Medicaid programs and some insurance companies. So there's a lot of interesting trends that we're seeing, especially with more and more ASCs.
Yeah, very interesting. And you're right. A lot of folks may not realize, depending on what product type or line of business you're looking at, there are things that are covered in some and not in others. Even lodging could be covered under Medicaid as well.
Yes, you've seen that too. Yes. Where they own Airbnbs and
there's some crazy things. I guess speaking of maybe crazy is not the right word, but what are some of the most interesting things that you've seen, or what stands out? Usually there's something, you know, when you think back on, you know, your years of experience, there's always a couple of things that you just, you know, it's the story that you like to keep telling. So what is that story? And there may be more than one, but what sticks out in your mind of some of the things that you've seen?
Oh my gosh. The stories, right? We could go on and on and on. You know, specific to pain management, there have been some really interesting stories. You know, obviously for privacy purposes, I can't talk about who, what, when, where, but I've had, you know, a case that I worked on where a pain management doctor, which actually was a former cardiologist, got into pain management because it seemed like it would be more lucrative, and started, you know, doing all of these unnecessary things. So it started with tracking urinalysis. So he would do a urinalysis on every patient, you know, every week. And that was something that was new. And then he would order, let's say, EKGs and, you know, spirometries and unnecessary tests. Again, looking at the data, you can see, okay, this has never happened before. Now this is starting to happen, and it's happening with every patient. Let's say every 3 months they're coming in for, you know, these types of services. And then he started doing retail pharmacy. So, you know, he was busy. Exactly. And it was like, okay, you know, you could see the business model evolving, and you could see, you know, how the money was coming in. And so retail pharmacy, and it got to where this provider was basically getting patients addicted to pain meds instead of, you know, referring them for appropriate treatment, let's say for PT, or maybe if they needed to see a surgeon. Like, it was literally, you know, the goal to get these patients addicted to things that he could provide in the office and then continue to monitor them. And this came out to be, you know, when it was all said and done, right? You got false claims, you got civil monetaries. It was like, I think, maybe $27 million that he had to pay back. Of course, you know, he's never going to work in any place anymore. You know, he's obviously done, but that definitely sticks out. And, you know, I've seen just so many different things over my time, Karen. That's why when I listen to your podcast, I just love your stories, because you can't make this stuff up. It's really almost like a soap opera when you get in the weeds and you really start to uncover some of the things that go completely undetected without investigators and people like you that are kind of peeling the curtain back and seeing, okay, this is what's really happening.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And the other part about it is it hasn't gone away. It just shifts. You know, so, you know, you continue to have people who are trying to game the system monetarily. And then, of course, like the example you just provided, it's not just about money, but there's also patient care issues involved, which, you know, something that we want to be a part of mitigating as well. And, you know, to make sure that these patients are not in a situation where they're not getting the right care. And, you know, like that scenario, I think it was on another episode of American Greed, which I watch all the time, where that Insys, that company where they had the opioid kickback scheme, and they're yes. bribing doctors to give their patients more and more, and basically made them become addicted to it. So it's
so sad,
very, very sad. So we don't just do what we do to save, you know, like at least on my end, to save our clients money, or on your end, you know, as well, it's also, again, to do the right thing and to help, help people as well.
It totally is. It is. And, you know, obviously I'm giving the, you know, extreme example, but I also work on the other side where I work directly with physicians and teach them, you know, exactly what they need to understand from a compliance standpoint about doing things the right way. So there is a balance between education and then, you know, obviously the fraud side of things and the reactive approach.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So while you were giving your example about the facet joint injections, I was opening my CPT book, which I still have, and I was looking at the codes, and it's just so important with all these changes. You know, I'm sure it's probably one of the pieces of advice you give folks is always make sure you have the information from each year, because code changes every year. You have to look at that data service. Are there other pieces of advice for coders outside of, you know, looking at the right, you know, year of a book? Are there other things that they should be looking out for to guide them in this field?
Yes, NCCI edits. I am truly blown away by how many coders, coding professionals don't understand the concepts when they apply, how they apply, and they change on a quarterly basis. So it's something that has to be monitored ongoing. And also understanding that place of service determines billability. So again, in my example about what can be reported in the ASC versus what can be reported in the office setting is not a one-to-one match. There are distinctions. And then if you're dealing with the procedure or any type of, you know, surgery or service that you're not really sure what it looks like. I always tell, you know, folks, go on YouTube or, you know, Google and actually see the procedure. So go and look at an epidural steroid injection, you know, look at the procedure, see what they're doing, see the instruments that they're using so that you can conceptualize what it is, what's actually happening. And then of course, what's true today may not be true tomorrow, obviously, with the things that are going on with, you know, the COVID-19 pandemic, which, you know, the public health emergency is still in effect. And I don't know, obviously, what's going to happen with the status of that, but we're seeing cases starting to rise in certain areas. So we just never know what's going to change. And it's absolutely imperative that if you're working in a position where you have influence on what's being reported for a provider, it's not only your responsibility, but it's in your best interest and a lot of other people's best interest to stay up to date on those changes. And I would say last but not least, if you're in doubt and you know you need help from a subject matter expert, they're always going to be worth their weight in gold. I've had so many people come to me after they've gotten that letter from the insurance company, after it's a problem, again, taking that reactive approach, and they've said, oh, I wish I would have hired you years ago or when I first started this new service line, because we could have figured this out at that time. And at the end of the day, it's going to be better than you trying to guess your way through it. It's very similar to when you file your taxes, you know, everybody's at risk for an audit. You want to make sure that you're applying the proper interpretations, the proper guidelines when you're doing something that you don't have the expertise to make those decisions on.
That is great advice. I cannot thank you enough for your wisdom and your knowledge and sharing today. I always enjoy our conversations. I wanted to also make sure people know about your website, which you can tell me if I'm getting this wrong, but it's alphacodingexperts.com, right?
That's right, Karen.
And I believe all of your podcasts are available through there, or their particular mediums that are better to listen to for your podcast.
Yes. And Karen, thank you so much for having me on. I love your show and I'm excited for all the great things you're going to be putting out.
You too. You too. All right. Okay. So don't forget Toni L. Holmes, listen to Alpha Coding Podcast and check out her stuff on her website as well. And you and I will be in touch soon, as I'm sure, you know, we've got more things to discuss with some of these coding changes.
100%. We're going to be busy, ladies, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Thank you so much, Toni.
Thanks, Karen.